Now, when we talk also about mindfulness, I want to make really clear at the outset that this is not just about sitting meditation. We do sit meditation, and we do it for a lot of great reasons, but the primary reason is that suffering comes when we make contact with our senses without mindfulness. And I'm going to talk about this sort of in more detail much later. If we want to build deep and abiding awareness, moment-by-moment awareness, we have to have somewhere to build that trait. And so the sitting meditation, the walking meditations, the formal meditations are where we actually build the capacity to stay present in our day-to-day lives. The Buddha taught that mindfulness is to be practiced sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. Well, that kind of covers it. I mean, there may be other positions, but it pretty much covers our lives, right? So the teaching is develop mindfulness, which is a moment-to-moment awareness is enlightenment. Enlightenment is the capacity to stay aware. And so we develop that in our sitting meditations, in our walking meditations, and in our formal meditations, and that gives us more and more capacity to be present in all the other aspects of our lives. Things got out of order, so let me just get them back in order for a minute. The other thing we said we would talk about are kind of what the effects of mindfulness are. And there's been, as you know, I mean, none of this is new to you. There's been a ton of research on mindfulness. And when people are doing studies, almost entirely they're using mindfulness-based stress reduction, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to develop reliability across the data set. And so mindfulness is a word that can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. And so what the people in research have really settled on is let's use one standard, and the standard is the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction class. And those of us who have been trained in that have been asked, if we're doing mindfulness-based stress reduction, do mindfulness-based stress reduction. Don't add a lot of stuff to it. There's plenty there already, and it will help then in terms of developing a more robust data set around the effects of mindfulness. But we have some of those effects, and I used to be really fascinated with this stuff and stayed on top of it, and then I realized that thing I talked about earlier about how we sort of worship the mind, I was doing that both in worshiping the mind and, two, letting it be too much of an intellectual exercise for me and not enough of a practice exercise. So I'm a little less fascinated with it, and I'm also less fascinated with it because the brain science is still quite new. And so we are seeing some interesting effects on MRIs and fMRIs, but we don't really have a good distinction yet between treatment variables. So there's some things I think are looking quite strong and robust, but there's not a lot of things you can point to and say there's a 15% increase in happiness if you do an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction. You just can't. So, but I will cover a few of those. What we're not doing tonight, so we're doing the Western secular mindfulness. We're going to talk a little bit about the origins, which are the Anapanasati Sutra. We'll do some practice. What we're not doing, I'm not an expert in Buddhism. We may have some experts in Theravada and Buddhism here, and please put your hands up so I know who you are, because I like to be collegial in talks, so we may need some help. Okay? And I'm not an expert in Jung at all, and I'm sure we have some experts in Jungian stuff here. Who are you? So I can know sort of who to go with. You know, don't be shy. I'm not asking who's written a book or who has a PhD. I'm simply saying who feels really quite well versed in it. They're all in the front. Okay. So I'm going to lean on the front on that stuff. I have thoughts about each for what that's worth, but I'm not sure that that's worth much. So I think it's also important to address what I think are sort of the big picture issues and the small picture issues. So in Western secular mindfulness, we're pretty much focused on the small picture. And the small picture is, how can I feel better? The big picture is, how can I have full elimination of suffering? They're very different. And this is a conversation that's happening worldwide about this Western secular mindfulness movement. And I have a deep bow of respect for this conversation. I think it's an essential conversation to have. And I want to say that I think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with Western secular mindfulness if it's taught in a way that honors the tradition and comes from a place of wanting to be beneficial and skillful. And I think it can come from other places. And I think that it can really stimulate a seed of awareness and interest that might lead to a journey that would look toward more peace and joy and happiness and enlightenment, awareness, moment to moment. So I think it's a good thing, by and large. Okay, so the brain stuff, you're familiar with some of it, but let me just do a brief summary of some of what we've seen. Both meditation and yoga. Oh, I should have also given thanks to Sarah Lazar. She's a Harvard neuroscientist who's doing a lot of work with this. And you can find some good YouTube talks by her. Both meditation and yoga have been shown to reduce stress, to decrease symptoms of depression, anxiety, insomnia, and pain. And people report being happier and having a better quality of life. We see neuroplastic results of mindfulness practice, and frankly, it doesn't take much mindfulness practice to begin to see these shifts in the brain. One of them is that we see more gray matter, more density in the prefrontal cortex. Prefrontal cortex is what we use. It's in that part of the brain that's up in here. If you think of a brain as looking like a hand, it sits right up here. It's this part of the hand. And it's responsible for our working memory, for executive function, and for... And the interesting thing is that we know that our brains shrink as we age. And they did a study where they looked at longtime meditators. This was a Harvard study. They looked at longtime meditators, and then they demographically matched them with non-meditators. That was the first study they did. And the people who have meditated for a long time, 30 to 40 minutes in a session at least four times a week, their prefrontal cortexes were the same density and size as the people who were 25 in the study. And these meditators were 50 or older. And so we know that it helps to maintain prefrontal cortex. Which,
how long have they meditated?
Well, those people had meditated for a long time. Now, they've done follow-up studies, and they're seeing increased density in a number of areas of the brain, including the prefrontal cortex. I don't think you're going to see no shrinkage unless you're doing this as kind of a practice, as an important practice.
Would you have to have done it for years to get this?
Well, I don't know. Here's the thing, I don't know. So if your brain, I know some people in town who do transcranial magnetic imaging, this treatment for depression and other things. And if your brain has, if the brain has actually pulled back from the cranium more than, I think it's a half an inch. Somebody know this in this group? I think it's a half an inch, three quarters of an inch. You can't get a good magnetic response, and so you can't use it. So I don't know if it's building it to the point where you would bridge that gap or not, but it certainly can help maintain what's there. I think we can be confident in that. We see more growth in the left hippocampus, which assists in memory and emotional regulation. We're seeing more growth in the temporoparietal junction, which is the part of our brain that is engaged with reactivity. So the amygdala is the part that sort of stores difficult emotions, but the temporoparietal junction is the part of the brain that begins to have an interpretive that sort of immediate interpretive response, and it helps us to be less reactive. And it's also involved in empathy and compassion. Dr. Richard Davidson out of the University of Wisconsin, Madison, is doing a ton of work on meditation and compassion. It's very interesting. And they're also looking at brain changes. I think there's a lot of movement right now in the scientific community to have that data, but also to look at what are the effects in terms of a person's quality of life and their interactions with other people as a data set that's just as important as whether or not there's more density in the brain. So.